Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. When Jesus was here on earth, he made it clear that we were to love all people of all faiths in all lands. The new commandment he gave us was simple and to the point, love one another as I have loved you. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, has just returned from a trip to some of the very places where Jesus made his many declarations of acceptance and love, and he's here to share with us what he saw and what he felt as he walked where Jesus walked. Lincoln, I'm really looking forward to hearing about your trip. The time is yours.
Well, it's a two-hour program today. I can keep it shorter, but as a Christian, Seventh-day Adventist Christian going to Israel, the epicenter of what's called the Holy Land, I was sort of unprepared for the overall effect. It's so rich in meaning. And as I've often said myself on this place and others, the burden of history is so overwhelming that even though I had high expectations, it was different and more impressive than I thought. And I've come away from it realizing that the conflict, even though there's many good things, but the conflict between religious forces epitomized by Jerusalem, that epicenter of Israel, is almost insoluble. But you see there, many of the conflicts in the larger world just worked out in fast motion and in an in-your-face manner that has been continuing for so many thousands of years. We were looking often in our touring back to the life and times of Christ, but that's really a midpoint in the history of Jerusalem and the Middle East, and the religious conflicts. Conflict is an operative word there, not just argumentation, but warfare between Philistines and Hebrew and Egypt coming up, and Babylon, and so on, you name it. And the city of Jerusalem is really just an unpiling of one civilization after another, literally, because one building is built on the ruins of another, and then that becomes this foundation for the next. So it's the debris of the centuries, and it still exists, and very, very interesting to tour.
That's what archaeologists will tell you as they dig down. They go through civilization after civilization after civilization. It's layered over there. It's just simply layered.
Yeah, we don't think like that other than my my office is a little that way. And my wife gets on my case. But, you know, we're used in the U.S. I see it, in fact, in the U.S. more than Australia. There's an office block that often looks pretty good to me, and then someone else buys it. Next thing, there's a bulldozer, and they flatten it, and they remove everything, and there's a clean slate, and you build a new one. Mm-hmm. That is not the way in the old world. And I think part of it was they didn't have anywhere to take it or any means to take it anywhere. Mm-hmm. One incredible illumination to me was how rocky Jerusalem itself and the hills and the countryside all around it, certainly all the way south and east, and it's quite a while even heading toward the Sea of Galilee before it's even mildly pastoral looking. It's just rock-strewn lunar landscape. So when they're building a building, they need rocks. So you're not going to get rid of the rocks of the last building. You just put more of the same and up you go.
My dad used to say when they stoned Stephen, they didn't have to go very far for ammunition.
No. By the way, I'll jump in on the story. There's no way I can tell what I experienced in a linear fashion, but one of the highlights of this tour, and I was with, at different times, two busloads of nearly 100 people, and then we joined up with some others on the weekend. So in total, there was about 150 people. But one of the highlights on Saturday, the last Saturday, we stopped at a television studio. It was more than a television studio, at a large satellite center in the middle of a plain about an hour out of Jerusalem. It was this like a Cold War icon. There were these immense satellite dishes, dozens of them, all clustered together, pointing different directions. One of them was, I think, about 200-300 foot across. And it looked to me like the major communications center for Israel, probably military as well. And we recorded there a two-hour special for the Christian and Seventh-day Adventist individual-directed 3ABN. Mm-hmm. It's not a church network, but a group of lay people that are Seventh-day Adventists have had a burden to get a message all around the world. And so I was pleased to be part of them as they did a historic broadcast from that studio, of course, throughout Israel, but around the world. And the significance of that location was that was the Valley of Elah. Uh-huh. And only a few miles away where our bus stopped on the way was the little stream and the flat area where the two armies of the Philistines and the Israelites faced off, and Goliath for, what was it, I think several months. Goliath came out every day, and yes, that giant, he says, you know, you got a champion, send him out. And whoever wins, the others will be your slaves. Yeah. And the story, as we reread it from the Bible, said that David, he was probably quite a strapping young guy, but he was the junior in his family, and his brothers told him off for even turning up on the battlefield. And David, without any armor, heads off toward the giant, and he reaches down to that little stream that we saw. No water in it, mind you. Lots of stones.
Yes.
And it was told he picked up five of those little smooth stones and used one of them in a sling to bean the giant, hit him between the eyes. He fell down, and then a lot of people don't realize the progression. He didn't kill him with the stone. He just knocked him down.
Yeah.
Because in the front, that wasn't even his brain necessarily. That was the sinus. Mm-hmm. But he knocked him out cold. He fell down, and then David rushes forward, pulls the giant's own sword, and cuts the giant's head off. Mm-hmm. But those little five little stones, and I've got five stones that I put in my pocket and brought them back. Probably not as big as the one he got. I wanted easier to carry ones.
Yeah.
But I never realized that he took five stones, likely, because Goliath was of a family of five giants.
Huh.
He only used one of them, but later on they killed the other four.
Wow.
So those are the little passing figures that we picked up on the tour. But, you know, since we're talking about religious liberty, or at least that's the focus of this program, I have to say that the high point on the visit for me was on Friday night, right near sunset. And for Jews and for Seventh-day Adventists, indeed anybody that reads the Bible carefully, if they're worshiping God in that manner, the seventh-day Sabbath begins at sundown on Friday and ends at sundown on Saturday. The seventh day is the Sabbath, that Saturday. And so we went to the Wailing Wall, and I'd seen photographs of that the back in the Six-Day War when the Israeli soldiers recaptured it. Very moving pictures at that time of Israeli soldiers weeping and crying and bowing before the wall with their guns lying on the ground behind them. But I wasn't ready for the reality of it. It was overwhelming. You know, I expected it to be impressive. It's the lower foundation and part of the wall of the old temple,
right,
that was ruined by the Romans. But how can you ruin massive stones that are so interlocked that they go down to the bedrock? They're part of the bedrock, indistinguishable from the bedrock. And so as we came there, we see this foundation that's huge and stretching hundreds of yards in several directions. But on top of it is the Al-Aqsa Mosque that the Muslim conquerors of later years had placed on top of it, which is an interesting religious dynamic. And then off to one side, the golden Dome of the Rock, again, occupied by Islam, but really not built by them. I did not realize that the Crusaders had built that,
yes,
and it had been taken over by the Muslims. But both of these holy Muslim places rearing above us as we gather with many, many Jewish worshippers come to welcome the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. Some of them were in those Eastern European outfits that even our guide sort of smiled a bit when he said, well, they're dressed as noblemen from Poland, and, you know, 200 years ago, they've sort of chosen to remain in that time warp. But there's different, very unique dresses that these Orthodox Jews were wearing. Mm-hmm. But there were many just everyday Jewish citizens that were there, all in an exulting mood. The Sabbath was coming, and how happy they were. Mm-hmm. And as the moment came closer, and I seem to remember the shofar being blown, you know, things were getting electric, and the crowd was surging in different ways. It's a huge courtyard next to it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, a group of, I'd say, about 250 or so young boys, probably from 10 to 14 years of age or so, came out of the nearby yeshiva or religious school in a sort of a phalanx, all drawn up in order in a square, and they came singing and surging down toward the wall. Mm-hmm. Very exultant. And then simultaneously off to the side, there was a large circle of maybe 50 to 100 young teenage girls, again, singing and skipping and the circle swirling. You know how a circle can rotate like a wheel?
Yes.
And the moment of just great happiness is the moment of the sunset and the Sabbath It was infectious. More than infectious, it was emotionally overwhelming. And I never expected that. And you never could get that on a movie. You never could see it in a photograph. You had to be there. And of course, for a Jew, that's extremely meaningful. But, you know, I'm not a Jew. I'm not an Orthodox Jew, someone that's literally following the Old Testament. But the emotion of religious commitment and excitement is infectious because I think all people share a proclivity towards seeking God. That I'll never forget till I die.
You know, even as you say that, and I picture it in my mind, I think, what have we lost? We as Seventh-day Adventists, as Christians, when the Sabbath comes, well, you know, we might be quiet and sit pensively someplace, but where is the exaltation? Where is the joy? Where is the absolute thrill of knowing that we're doing something that God wants us to do and God wants to partner with us? I think we're missing something when we don't
absolutely
meet the Sabbath with joy.
I know, and not just the Sabbath, but I'll tell you what it put me to mind of. You know, we're creatures. I mean, in my mind, I'm the most intelligent creature in the world, right? but you know, we're intelligent creatures, but we're part of God's myriad creation.
Yes, yes.
When we come close to God, if he's anything like he says he is, and most people imagine a God, how could you keep calm in his presence? And so here, you know, the Sabbath is a close time with God. And what I thought the parallel was to, in the simple creation, like cicadas and other insects and birds on a sunny day, we know that the spontaneous joy just in life. Yes, I don't know how we can get to that again, but it's one thing to do something because you're intellectually convinced there's a God and he wants you to acknowledge him and you like to read about him. But there should be another step where there's emotional connection. And even if you haven't yet made that connection, an emotional surge just to think that you might be about to make the connection, that yes, you're in the presence of God.
Yes, yes.
That's an enviable thing, and far too few people in the West, I think, experience that. Many Christians, Jews, Muslims, I'm sure, and Buddhists and others in their own situations around the world have certainly had emotional responses. And I think many of them, it's been accentuated as their faith has been threatened in different places. Yeah. Where there's pressure, you suddenly learn to cherish what you've had. And there's no question that even today, Israel, of course, is under a certain cloud of threat.
It would seem to me that if we had that kind of joy, if it returned to our experience with God, we would be more protective of providing for our beliefs and for other people's beliefs if we had that kind of joy. That's what we're missing, and that's a good lesson there that you've learned there.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Our time has slipped away, Lincoln. I want to bring you back on the next program and continue this conversation about your recent journey to the Holy Land, where you walked, where Jesus walked. We'll do that next time on the program. Our website, libertymagazine.org. Check it out. Until next time with Lincoln Steed, this is Charles Mills inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.